to episode 312 of Late Night Linens, recorded on the 16th of December, 2024. I'm Joe, and with me are Fainim.
I hope you've got your shopping done.
Graham.
Merry Christmas.
And Will.
Selection box time.
No, that was about 5-6 weeks ago.
Yeah, surely you'd be onto Easter eggs by now.
yeah, exactly. Right, before we get into the news, send us your predictions for 2025, because next time we record, we'll be doing, all being well, a look back at the year and then our predictions for 2025. And we're all shit at that. So if you all send us in yours, then we can just steal yours.
It actually kind of ruins Christmas for me, really, because then I realize I have to be thinking about stupid predictions that I'm not going to get right anyway.
Well, we'll look back at our previous predictions and I will find a way to win as usual. But yeah, send us them in anyway, show@latenightlinux.com. Right, there's been some pretty good news for Linux gaming, I would say. There's been a few different things happening. Valve has released some branding guidelines for Powered by SteamOS, for hardware running the SteamOS operating system implemented in close collaboration with Valve. And there is strong rumors that Lenovo are going to announce a handheld running SteamOS. So it's finally happening. SteamOS is going to run on more than just the Steam Deck. This has to be good news.
I think it's brilliant news. Of course, we did have a SteamOS some, I don't know, over a decade ago, whatever the Debian-based system was. But what I really like about this is that when Valve released SteamOS for its Steam Deck and based it on Arch and all of that, other people saw the success of the handheld and they were free to try and compete with Windows. And for a while, a lot of us thought that that would be the answer because the drivers would work better. They'd have a more integrated experience with the anti-cheat stuff. And yet, I think SteamOS has proven that it's better than Windows. Gaming is better on Linux than on Windows. And so this kind of opens the floodgates for Valve to say, yeah, we've got something here.
Better with an asterisk, as Will told us recently. And that is that not all games work yet.
Yeah, but no one's been able to compete with the Steam Deck with Windows as an offering.
I wonder why that is, because the drivers should be better. The power consumption should be better. It should be doable. Is it just cost here? Is the extra whatever Windows taxes these days, 70 quid, let's say, per unit, is that what is making the deal? Is that the margin that means that Valve can actually competitively produce this hardware because they're not paying the Windows tax? And that is what makes the model viable? Or is there something more to it than that?
Lipstick on a pig. That's what it is.
Well, I think there is something more to it, and that is that Windows is just not very good on that form factor. Microsoft haven't made the effort.
You could have just stopped after very good, and that would have been fine. But do you not think that Steam is kind of beating Windows at their own game from the 80s, where they are being the open platform, hey, anybody, come along, you can do our own thing, where they don't have a... They're not trying to sell you an OS because the OS is open and all they want you to do is use the ecosystem and anybody can come play and it's not special and it doesn't require, you know, the blessed hardware.
Possibly, but we've heard stories previously about indie game developers saying, I can't be bothered to target Linux and by extension SteamOS because the users are a pain in the ass. The hardware sometimes doesn't work or the OS sometimes doesn't work. It's difficult to get support for the variety of different setups that is out there. Then Steam came along and said, well, fine, just pretend it's Windows and everything will just work. Nevertheless, I don't imagine there are a bunch of developers out there who are specifically targeting SteamOS. And the extension of what the previous conversation, once you're in the Steam Deck, once you're in the gaming setup itself, you never see Windows. You know, you're entirely inside Steam. So I can't believe it's such a success, I guess is my point. I'm glad it is. I just don't understand how.
I think there are a couple of things. We're probably over-egging the success. I think it's probably something Valve are going to make some cautious steps, and there seems to be some demand for them to do so. But on the one hand, I think they've created a really great integrated environment for this handheld device. The messaging, the recording, the whole thing works and you can do everything within this. It doesn't work that way when you try and build something in Windows. And the shells that they've created aren't as effective that I've seen. There's also the switching to the desktop and the kind of embracing of the retro gamers and the other people who want to hack their own solutions. But also, effectively Valve controls the whole vertical stack on the Steam Deck. I know it's Linux and there's some negotiation involved if they want to change things in the kernel, and but they can still do whatever they want to do. And you just can't do that on Windows.
I posted a link in our Telegram show chat about Halo using Ogg Vorbis back in the day, because it was more expensive for them to license the Windows services than it was to actually use Ogg inside what was a, I believe, Microsoft, in fact, distributed game. So like, if they don't even use their own products to distribute their own utilities, well, who knows what costs are inside in Microsoft, really?
I think the concept of Microsoft demanding control over things, I think that's a very interesting subject. I bet if you pick at that a little bit, there's a whole horrible mess underneath where Microsoft demand that you include whatever their AI nonsense is, or that your default browser is whatever their default browser is, and so on. I bet there's a lot of that going on.
Well, there's also the fact that there are at least some games that run better under Linux, under Proton, than on Windows. And I remember way back in the day when gaming on Linux was starting to be a thing, I said that gamers really value frame rates. And if Linux can do a better job than Windows, they will switch. I don't know if that has come true yet, but you know, if you've got a relatively underpowered handheld and the whole stack on Linux is better, then you're going to have a better time, aren't you? And also, there is the plain fact that people generally stick with defaults. People don't flash different operating systems on their phone, they don't install Linux on their laptop, and they don't change the operating system on their Steam Deck, even though they could install Windows on it.
It'll be exciting to make a few predictions for 2025.
It will indeed. Something that may play into it is a story we've got from Notebook Check. Microsoft paves the way for Linux gaming success with plan that would kill kernel-level anti-cheat. Love. Now, it's not about this. It's not really about this. It's about CrowdStrike and how that was kernel-level shit that just balked loads and loads of Windows machines all over the world. And so Microsoft are saying that they're going to move shit like that out of the kernel. And that could have the knock-on effect that anti-cheat shit ends up outside the kernel, which in theory makes it better for Linux gaming. So maybe that last piece of the puzzle may fall into place over the next year.
No.
Oh, you're so wrong. Imagine allowing third-party, let's put it a nice way, morons to control the kernel of your operating system. Like, honestly, it's ridiculous. I've never seen such a farcical idea in all my life. And I have watched people online talking about how you can do all this stuff without having to do that by using statistics and blah, I don't know. It was all magic, but it did sound very plausible.
Why do you say no, Will?
Because he's a miserable git.
Because this is just entirely conjecture based entirely around the idea that because X, therefore Y, because Microsoft will stop kernel level access, then it follows the easy cheat, or whatever it's called, will then have to find a new way of operating and therefore will come to Linux. There's too many elements in that chain, all of which will fall apart before it will ever get to the point that it will get to Linux. Additionally, they have said quite clearly, like the Epic Games people have said very clearly, they will never come to Linux. I don't think that that's an easy cheat reason. I think that's just sour grapes.
Yeah, but companies change their minds about shit. You know, if you've got loads of Linux handhelds being sold running SteamOS from other companies as well as Valve, Lenovo and the like, there will be a market there to sell people games.
But as you said yourself, this won't be a massive commercials overnight success, right? It's going to be limited to a few hardcore gamers. I don't think that's the market that, for example, Epic are going after. I'm not saying it would be bad if it happened. I just don't think it will.
What's Tim Sweeney got on you, Will?
He leaves the money in King's Cross and I go and pick it up. That's all you need to know.
I think that you might be right, or I fear that you might be right. There's a lot of conjecture and a lot of logical leaps going on with this. But, you know, you have to be a dreamer, don't you, to be a Linux person?
I understand the sentiment, but I think it helps to be realistic. It's not really affecting very many people at the moment, I don't think. If you want to play Fortnite, play it on Windows. If you want to play literally all the games on Steam, then do it on Linux.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Servomania. Go to servermania.com/LNL to get 15% off dedicated servers recurring for life. Servermania is a Canadian company with over a decade of experience building high-performance infrastructure hosting platforms for businesses globally. Servermania has up to 20 gigabits per second network speeds in 8 locations worldwide for optimized global reach. They have flexible custom server configurations tailored to unique needs, as well as a personal account manager offering free consultations. With 24/7 live chat support and support ticket response times under 15 minutes, you can always keep your systems running smoothly. Alan Jude from 2.5 Admins has been a happy Servermania customer for over 7 years. So support the show and join him at a hosting provider that truly delivers. Get 15% off dedicated servers recurring for life at servermania.com/LNL and use code LATENIGHTLINUX. That's servermania.com/LNL and code LATENIGHTLINUX. Raspberry Pi 500 and Raspberry Pi Monitor on sale now.
I'm quite excited about this. I've got a Raspberry Pi 400. I like the form factor. I like the fact that I can get a computer down from the shelf, which is a Raspberry Pi, and I don't have to go hunting for a USB keyboard to plug into it, and I can hook it up to my monitor and just get going with whatever it is I want to do, with all of the power of a Raspberry Pi and all of those low-level things that you can do with it. So as a form factor, I really quite like it. And I think buying a Raspberry Pi 5 in that form factor, there were some really good deals on recently, and it could be slightly cheaper to buy it in that form factor from a lot of places. Quite what that tells you, I don't know. But yeah, I think this is a nice little toy, a nice Christmas present.
Another thing that you can have is there's the large library of books that the Pi Foundation publishes through either other writers or through themselves, things for getting kids involved in coding. It's a sort of almost like the way the BBC was back in the day, of a standard platform that, you know, everybody who uses one will have pretty much the same thing, even if it is a Pi 5, 4, or whatever. And it gives that whole sort of standardized ecosystem that, you know, it's going to be around for a while and pre-developed, as opposed to, you know, here's a PC, it's got an OS on it, off you go. Like,
right. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to be slightly less positive, gents. The Raspberry Pi 500 as a product makes no sense whatsoever. It just does not make sense in 2024 into 2025. Let me explain. If I want to go and buy one of these things now, including the power supply, I'm looking at about 96 quid, 95, 96 quid, something like that. Best part of a ton. Right. Okay.
Oh, I can see where this is going. Are you going to mention ThinkPads?
I'm not going to mention ThinkPads.
Oh, it's a Wise. It's the mystical Wise devices, is it?
Nope, not even that. I'm going to mention the N100. So that is an Intel processor, the N100, and you can get it in all sorts of small factor PCs. And I happened to look on Amazon, what is the cheapest one you can get? It's a Peladon, whatever that is, N100 mini PC, 16 gigs of RAM, 512 M.2 SATA SSD. So not the fastest, but, you know, still reasonably okay. Dual 4K HDMI sockets, 99 quid. So just a few quid more than a Pi 500. Yes, you're going to need a keyboard, but how much is that going to cost you? 10 quid for a basic keyboard. So for just a little bit more than a Pi 500, you can get yourself an N100 based x86 machine that uses, okay, a little bit more power, but you can run whatever Linux distribution you want on it, whatever software you want on it, and you're not in this ARM world where, okay, it's got a lot better. And yet, again, you've got no GPIO, and you can like have an adapter to get the GPIO out of the Pi 500, but the performance you're going to get out of this thing is so much better than a Pi 500, and you're not limited in the OSs that you can run on it. There is not an OS that you can run on a Pi that you can't run on an x86 machine, but it's not the other way around, is it?
Those things are hot, tiny wee boxes that pack, you know, they pack in, because they're cooking themselves. And as you say, the power is much more. It depends on the use case, I would say. Like, if you are a user of computer systems and know all about them, then yeah, that probably makes more sense. But as I was saying, if you're trying to get that for kids or the like, where you're essentially giving them a inverted commas console that happens to be a distro that they could do stuff and learn things with, I think that's where the Pi comes in.
Yeah, but this is a 6-watt TDP, so it's not even that much more than a Pi 5.
It's a PC, though. No one else has that box except you and three other people who saw it on Amazon and bought it before the company disappeared off the internet.
Right.
That's the problem. It is a great PC to have for you as a person who knows what they're doing to do what they want to, but I don't think that's ever been the case of what the Pi has been for. Yes, lots of people use them for things, but that's not really what they're supposed to be for. They're supposed to be for a, you know, sort of uniform standard computer that anybody who uses the same thing can do the same projects with.
But why can't you just do all the same projects with an x86 machine?
Because nobody's going to have the same GPIO board. It's like, oh, I got the one soon GPIO board. That one goes on fire if you connect up the 3-volt line. This one over here is the Fan Huang fucking board, and that actually shorts the motherboard out. There is no standard there.
How many people buy a Pi 500 or even a Raspberry Pi 5 and use the GPIO at all?
The only person I know who bought one was my pal, and he bought one for his kids so they could do things like that and play Elite and all that sort of stuff on it, and he did that. I won't say how successful it was, but still.
I think there is an enormous community of people who are using the GPIOs to control servos and build robot arms, and I guess, but I don't know, but I guess that is quite a lot of schools as well. But I think Phelim's right here. This is an off-the-shelf, ready-to-go component, which is standard, and all the reference books that have been written, you can pick up and use, and they just work. I think there's a lot of value in that. And I think, Joe, you're right. If I wanted to pick up a cheap PC to stick under the stairs that would run my home network, then one of those 100 quid jobs off Amazon would be perfect and an amazing value for money. But if I was a parent who wanted to give something to their child so that they could do similar stuff than they're doing at school, then I'd buy the Raspberry Pi.
And even look at the free magazine you get, the Magpie. It's a great magazine. I download the PDFs religiously. I don't read them that much, but like, there's so many resources there. It's amazing.
I just maintain that there's nothing you can do with a Pi that you can't do with an x86 machine. Yeah, you might have to buy a USB GPIO thing, and it might not be quite as good. But for the kind of projects that most kids are going to be doing, learning Python essentially, an x86 box is just going to be better. It's going to have much more legs long term as well. Once they get bored of learning that, you can turn it into some sort of server or whatever.
That's not true, Joe, though. You could get a USB GPIO connection, and the document that you read, the PDF or the news article on the BBC website or whatever, said, run this Python script, which switches GPIO 13 from 0 to 1, and it simply wouldn't work. And the sorts of people who are reading these articles and doing these exercises would not be able to debug it. That's why it's important that everything is reproducible every single time.
I even have some hardware sensor things that were made by DEC or DEX or something like that. I forget them now. Dexter Industries. And I had trouble even getting the bloody Python to work on those things. And that was by a third-party company that was meant to be easily plug in to the board on top. It's going to be fine. And then it turns out that the library was Python 2 compatible only for ages. And I was like, oh, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? I mean, I can't install like Debian 9 on the bloody Pi just to get this thing to run. So, I mean, that shows you what third parties don't necessarily bring good things. That PC world is all fine and well, but that's even worse there.
Maybe what I'm trying to say here is that the Pi 500 as a product makes zero sense to me then. Maybe I'm projecting onto other people my own desires and computing life. If I wanted a low power machine for something, whether it was for a desktop or for a server in my house, then I would buy an x86 machine any day of the week. But I suppose it makes sense in education. I'm just not the target market for this. I think what also rubbed me the wrong way was this new monitor of theirs, which, first of all, wasn't fucking available anywhere, so I couldn't even try it. But it's basically about 100 quid, give or take. And you can find on Amazon something basically similar for about 60 or 70 quid. I don't know whether that's going to look any better in terms of panel. You know, it's the one I found on Amazon had a better spec on paper. It had more nits and stuff. But when it comes to viewing angle and color quality and everything, who knows? I'd have to get them side by side. So maybe it's a really, really good monitor, but I couldn't buy one. So I have no idea.
I think, having listened to you all discuss this, I think these devices aren't for us. but I think they look great. I actually think that's important. There are a lot of people who want things to look the part. For all the reasons, the fact that Raspberry Pi is such a well-known platform and the ecosystem of everything you can do on it is so well-known, I think this is good. It's just not for us. I mean, I can imagine them being used in labs, for example, where everybody's got exactly the same setup, but it all looks great for people who are visiting.
And if you think about it, it's so cheap for a school to be able to fit out the computer department for everybody with essentially this gear, like what, 200 quid? You can't get anything else for 200 quid unless it's like some hand-me-down off some other company.
Well, you're clearly in the pocket of big Raspberry Pi. Okay, this episode is sponsored by Tailscale. Go to tailscale.com/LNL. Tailscale is the easiest way to connect devices and services to each other, wherever they are. Everyone these days has a VPN as a sponsor, but Tailscale isn't like those. This isn't about hiding your browsing habits from coffee shop owners, and it's not about watching Netflix in another country. Tailscale is a proper VPN for connecting your devices securely. It's great for companies, and it's great for self-hosters. Tailscale lets you connect anything, anywhere. Provide connectivity to any resource for your organization, from dashboards to a Synology NAS or Windows file server, from self-managed DNS servers to software as a service applications. If you want it off the public internet, Tailscale will provide secure access. Tailscale's personal plan will always be free, so support the show and try Tailscale out for free today. You'll get up to 100 devices and 3 users for free at tailscale.com/LNL with no credit card required. That's tailscale.com/LNL. New era of slop security reports for open source. So this is a post on Seth Michael Larson's blog, and it talks about security reports in the Python community and how increasingly they're getting these AI-generated bullshit reports, basically, or people using LLMs to find supposed security issues and then report them. And it's just starting to become a little bit overwhelming in the Python community. And Seth suspects that it is a wider issue. Just when you couldn't hate fucking AI bullshit enough, it's starting to fuck up open source projects.
Oh, it had already started with curl a couple of months back, if we remember. And yeah, I mean, just fuck off, I think is the term to use. But the one constructive thing he does, though, does highlight, you know, the do nots and the here's some things you could actually do, which I think are quite good. You know, don't use it to scan to detect it because they understand fuck all about code. And don't run experiments on open source volunteers. And he says that he was a member of the university that got absolutely lynched for the 2021 thing where they were trying to sneak code into the kernel to say, hey, look, we stuck code in the kernel, and they got lambasted for it. He says, don't do that. Like, that's just bad.
Yeah, he says my alma mater. So that means like he was there before that, by the sounds of things. That wasn't on his watch that happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He wasn't, you know, exactly. But yeah, he says like, don't spam projects. And he said, instead, you know, he makes a really good thing. You know, if you want somebody to work on something that you don't know about, fund them to do it if it's their time that you're using, and get someone who's of like the same project size to help consult as to what is a good thing to test. Because I mean, bombarding the bejesus out of a one project person is just really, you know, not the way to go.
I suspect that some of this comes from a place of wanting to help. Enthusiastic people who want to contribute to the project in some way and really don't know what they're doing. So they think, I've got a good idea. I'll ask AI to do it and then I can help these people out. It is counterproductive, of course, but I think that some of this, at least, and I would guess the majority, but maybe that's untrue, but I would think a lot of it comes from a place of trying to help.
I think he's far too generous given that. I think you too. I think people are thinking, oh yeah, I want to be a real cool security guy like those guys in that hackers film. But I don't actually do any study or work, so maybe the AI can do it for me, and I bet no one has thought of that yet.
Well, it reminds me of a friend of mine who has to deal with support tickets, essentially. And someone says, I am sorry about that. It happened by mistake because I'm still learning how to use ChatGPT.
Oh, Jesus.
People who are getting into tech now using ChatGPT, you know, I'm learning how to do it. It's really depressing.
You know what the solution is, though, don't you? Get AI to filter all of these bug reports.
Yeah. Stop.
Yeah, definitely throw more AI at it. That's definitely what we need to do.
Just a different one.
Yeah, a better one.
Why don't you get AI to invent a better AI? Why haven't they thought of that? Huh? Why?
Yeah.
Why are you telling us? You should be making millions of this.
I've got to register a domain name. Hold on.
Angel funding now.
That's exactly the sort of shit they're trying to do, I think. We're trying to get this fucking AGI shit, which is never going to happen.
Going well for them, though, isn't it?
It's funny now they've even admitted that, oh, yeah, like when we get it, it's not going to be as revolutionary as we said.
If they're saying that, it's going to be so fucking bad.
Yeah. It's just going to be like a slightly better ChatGPT that hallucinates a tiny bit less or something. God, I hope that it just all fucks off next year.
Oh, it'd be so good. It really would.
Ain't going to happen.
Nope, it's not, is it?
It ain't.
Not yet. Exciting news. XFCE 4.20 has been released.
Is this the rapture?
Yay! Are you going to do that with a 1920s radio effect on your voice?
Well, if you read the release, it says it's the bee's knees, the cat's pajamas. The bottom line is they've got Wayland support asterisk. Very much experimental. Not all the components are working by any means. And it may come to nothing, but that's very unlikely. I think that this is a step towards Wayland support, and it's a good way for people who are developers to contribute to it, but you're not going to be running Wayland on XFCE as just a normal end user anytime soon. But there are a bunch of other great improvements, you know, the file manager, just loads of stuff, just loads of quality of life improvements. But I'm not getting too excited about this. Because as Sean Davis says, and keep in mind he's the technical lead for Zubuntu, long-time XFCE users will love it. Folks on the outside looking in won't see any reason to switch. And he also says the new release certainly had a ton of work, but it won't drum up a lot of conversation or interest. Will, you've moved away from XFCE now, so you don't give a shit anymore. I'm thinking about moving away from it, and I don't know, we'll see about this Wayland stuff.
Au contraire, I do give a shit about it. I think this is a very cool thing to see. I wanted to try Wayland I wanted to try GNOME for a few reasons, one of which was the power saving stuff that we talked about previously. To me, this is very exciting. This shows that XFCE is very much not dead and does have a future. And actually, I think I might try and install it on this machine and give it a go. I'm quite excited to try it and to see how it is. I think it'll be brilliant.
What, specifically 4.20?
Yeah.
Right. Well, you'll have to report back on that because, you know, I'm an LTS person. I will eventually get these features and that'll be great, but I'm not going to daily drive it probably, realistically.
Well, yeah, and that's fair. I don't think I'll daily drive it, but I will hopefully add a PPA. And if that doesn't exist, try and build it myself just to give it a kick of the tires. I will keep GNOME on here so that I can use it when things break, but I definitely want to give it a go.
How are you finding GNOME then?
Well, not a lot has changed in the last, whatever it is, month or so since I've been using it. I tweaked it so that it looks and behaves the way that I want it.
Oh, yeah, shit. I was supposed to do that, wasn't I? And I completely forgot. I should do that. Yes. You're going to have to tell me exactly what you did.
Yeah.
And I'm going to configure GNOME to be like XFCE. But otherwise, you've been quite happy with it then?
Well, happy, quite a subjective term, right? The other day, my caps lock got out of sync. And so when the screen was locked and I was at the password like unlock screen, the caps lock was inverted to what it was when I was logged in. That annoyed me. And the only way to fix it was reboot, but I didn't want to reboot. And so I lived with that for a couple of days. That was annoying. Sometimes when the screen switched back on, the screen order has switched over and so has the audio. Sometimes it just locks up completely. So, you know, it's...
Wow.
It's not perfect.
Well, sounds like KDE to me.
Oh, shut up. You're doing a disservice to Sean Davis. I was feeling a bit sad for him when he said, and you can insert your own violin music in the background for this, but it's hard to compare the 2 years of XFCE development with the one of the weekly updates of KDE or GNOME. And it's like, oh, keep at it, you know, keep going. It's good. But now I take it all back. Fuck you. Caps lock out of sync, though. How is that even possible? How is that a thing? Does the keyboard on a GNOME machine go like out to a terminal server and then come back? You're like, what the fuck goes on there? That makes no sense.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine your company's security like the quad of a college campus. There are nice brick paths between the buildings. Those are company-owned devices, IT-approved apps, and managed employee identities. And then there are the paths people actually use. The shortcuts worn through the grass that are the actual straightest line from point A to B. Those are unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and non-employee identities like contractors. Most security tools only work on those happy brick paths, but a lot of security problems take place on the shortcuts. 1Password Extended Access Management is the first security solution that brings all these unmanaged devices, apps, and identities under your control. It ensures that every user credential is strong and protected, every device is known and healthy, and every app is visible. 1Password Extended Access Management solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. It's security for the way we work today, and it's now generally available to companies with Okta and Microsoft Entra, and in beta for Google Workspace customers. So support the show and check it out at 1Password.com/LateNightLinux. That's 1Password.com/LateNightLinux. On to a bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to latenightlinux.com/support. And remember that for various amounts on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And you even get some episodes early. And if you want to get in contact, you can email show@latenightlinux.com. Let's do a quick KDE corner. A post from Nate. I think the donation notification works.
This is absolutely awesome. This is what I want to see. It's, you know, if you're able to afford it, and you can, and people ask you for a donation, people have donated, and it's fantastic. I mean, the jury's still out. Is it a once-off? Next year when it pops up again, will it happen again? I don't know. But it's great to see people monetarily supporting the projects that they can, and, you know, them actually doing it. It's brilliant. And this doesn't even count for the people who do membership things. Like, I re-upped my membership when I saw this because I thought, Jesus, I don't think I've actually seen a notification that mine's lapsed. It probably has. So I went and redid mine, but that's not even counted by this.
So what we're talking about here is they put a notification on the 1st of December, which is going to be an annual thing, asking people to donate. And this is in Plasma 6.2. And then Nate woke up to a shitload of emails of notifications of people donating. And it turns out that in a few days of December, they got more money in than the previous 2 months combined. But yeah, it does raise the question of if they're only doing this once a year, is that going to work? And I think we talked about this when it was first announced. We said, fuck doing it once a year, do it every month.
People generally want to help, I think, and they just don't know how. And if they, you know, build it, people will come sort of thing. But you know, there was no way to buy music online at one point. Yet when it happened, people will now spend money on music. And likewise for open source software, if you give them a chance and remind them to do it. Because, I mean, I'd totally forgotten about my supporter membership thing. And only because of this, I went, oh, Jesus Christ, yeah, I better check that. And yeah, it had lapsed. So yeah, it's the way to go.
Well, Nate also makes the point that this is only really in up-to-date distros. People on an LTS of Kubuntu, say, which is presumably a shitload of people, have not had this notification yet.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this pokes them.
Well, they're not going to get it until next year, probably. So I think they should do it more often, honestly. People don't like notifications that are nagware. Fair enough. So maybe not every month, but maybe every quarter. I don't know. I feel like this has proved that it works. So you don't want to take the piss too much, but I think you can do it more than once a year.
Yeah, don't want to be a Jimmy Wales on it all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, you've got a couple of other things then. This week in KDE apps.
Yeah, there's just a load of apps that have come out. There's a new one out, CARP, which is a PDF arranger. Spectacle's now got animated WebP format that you can use. And Dolphin's done a whole lot of Orca 47 support. And I really like to see lots of help with the accessibility stuff. That's brilliant. And and Nate then makes a later Plasma post about the fact that there's loads of fixes for fractional scaling coming in as well with the latest 6.3. I am lucky I have a, whatever the opposite of a fractional scaling monitor is, but yeah, lots of people with laptops. Obviously, it's grief for them. So nice to see all that come. And Clipboard is now set to SQLite. I tell you, if SQLite were selling shares back in the day, it would have been a good thing to buy because it's bloody everywhere these days.
Right, well, we better get out of here then. We'll be back next week when it'll probably be discoveries and stuff. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Phelim.
I've been Graham.
And I've been Will.
See you later.